Hour number three. It is the Zach Gilb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage could help you get there for home loan solutions that fit your life well. Rocket can at Zach Gilb on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you give us a follow and also interact with our poll question today. Clemson this year will be winning it all, make the playoff, or miss the playoff. 2.7% say be winning it all. 18.9% say make the college football playoff. And 78.4% say that the Tigers of Clemson are going to miss the college football playoff once again this season. Five questions, five answers. We usually do this on a Monday, but since we were off yesterday, we'll do it today on a Tuesday. So you'll have onsides, offsides this week on Tuesday and Friday. Let's not even waste five more seconds of your time, and we get to it right now.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gilb on CBS Sports Radio.
Alrighty, hot take, Hickey, who was eating peppers and corn and what else was in that the meal that you had
corn
tonight?
Corn tortilla and some taco meat.
Did you make that?
I did. All by myself.
Did you follow a recipe? Because usually you're a pasta guy.
Yes and no. I mean, I just followed the instructions of how to cook it, but this came to my head where we had the Mexican corn in there. We had the peppers in there. I said, you know what?
It seemed like a leftover burrito. You had peppers with something, then you had a burrito somewhere. You had some taco meat. You had some corn, and you just mixed it all up.
Well, I really want a burrito, but I can't eat a burrito here. It's just too messy. I need my hands free and clean. So this is the next best option.
Well, you basically had a burrito. I was going to say, maybe you don't need a burrito because then you'll be in the bathroom.
No. I'll be okay. I don't know about that.
I think you're on the toilet for an extensive period of time if you're eating a burrito
here.
I
had this yesterday.
So you order a Chipotle burrito to the station. Let's say 5 o'clock.
Well, Chipotle's different.
You don't think you're running to the bathroom?
By 10 o'clock?
By 10 o'clock. I can't trust your cooking skills. I remember last year, when you finally went out of your comfort zone and tried something different, you didn't cook the chicken correctly, and then you had food poisoning.
Well, that's tougher to see with the pink.
Come on, cooking chicken.
Ground beef is way easier to cook than chicken.
Sure, but cooking chicken is one of the easiest things in America.
I'm not saying it's not. It's tough learning.
Are you better than DJ Uiagalelei? Like last year, DJ did not play well. And week one, we didn't really see that much of an improvement. Have you improved in the kitchen? Or are you going back down the DJ Uiagalelei path?
No, I think I'm very good in the kitchen. I watch some TikTok videos of, you know.
That's where you learn to cook TikTok.
No, just get, you know, a little inspiration is all. I can handle myself.
You have an air fryer?
We do.
Okay.
Didn't use it for this one, though.
You a pro using the air fryer?
No. I'm not. I mean, you don't know what has to be a pro. You just put it in there and put the timer on.
No. But there's certain things that you could make in the air fryer.
I have not got that
certain great things that you could watch on TikTok and then make in the air fryer.
But I mean, come on. Let's not pretend it takes a lot of skill. It's not like grilling.
I think there's some skill with the air fryer.
You put it in there. You turn the timer on.
No.
And you let it tick.
But it depends how you season things. It depends on the preparation. All that stuff does matter. The little things matter.
Oh, I agree. Preparation does matter. Absolutely.
Now, your girlfriend, though, is like a big foodie. She has the charcuterie board business. She's got to be big in the food world, right?
Yeah, other than the charcuterie board, no? I don't know about big in the food world.
Jeez.
No, she makes. She holds her own.
I wonder why you two are so skinny. You guys don't eat anything. You don't make anything.
She holds her own.
Who's the better cook, you or her?
Probably her.
I hope so.
Well, I mean, also, I just, you know, most
all you do
days,
is pasta and chicken.
I was gonna say it's tough to, you know, kind of flex my muscles when most times it's just chicken, just pasta.
All righty, what do you got for me?
All right. Statements. Week number one in college football. A lot were made, and a lot of drama also was had in the first opening weekend of college football. Florida, on the back of an incredible performance from Anthony Richardson, upset number 7 Utah 29-26 in the Swamp. Georgia, despite losing 9 defensive players from last year's historic defense, took Oregon to the woodshed. They won 49-3. My goodness. Ohio State's defense, they were much improved and shut down Notre Dame's offense. They won 21-10. And 19th-ranked Arkansas held on to defeat Cincinnati 31-24. Onsides or offsides, Zach, Florida had the most impressive week one win.
Would you agree that there's a difference between the best win and the most impressive win? Is there a difference in your mind between best and most impressive?
I would say no. I would put them together.
Because if this way was worded the best win, I could then maybe make the case, yes, Florida, with the quality of opponent they were playing up against Utah that you thought was going to the college football playoff, I could make the case they had the best win. But you look at it in the swamp, you knew that was going to be a close game. Oregon's the 11th ranked team in the country, and Georgia treated them as if they were an FCS program. With all that they lost and the disrespect that continues to come the way to Stenson Bennett. Now, Georgia didn't have the best win, but it was the most impressive with the way of the wording of the question, because they just humiliated, emasculated, eviscerated the Oregon program. So you say Florida had the most impressive week one win? I'm saying the most impressive win was Georgia just destroying the Ducks of Oregon. They killed the Ducks. Offsides.
Offside.
In baseball, two historic home run chases are coming down the stretch. Albert Pujols sits at 695 career homers with 27 games remaining for the Redbirds. Aaron Judge on Monday launches 54th home run of the season, now seven behind Roger Maris's Yankee and AL record of 61 homers in one season. Onsides or offsides, Zach? You're more intrigued with Albert Pujols' home run chase than Aaron Judge's.
So I know we separate this AL and NL, and you are right. Maris has the most home runs in the history of the American League with 61 in 61, and the NL with some juice. Sosa had 63, Sosa had 64, McGuire had 65, Sosa had 66, McGuire had 70, and then Barry Bonds had 73. I do believe there is a little bit of a debate that people view Maris as the single season home run leader for one year, because Sosa, McGuire, Bonds, even though that saved Major League Baseball with their home run chases, it's now viewed as a tainted record. That to me takes a lot of the juice out of the Judge race. Now what Judge is doing is remarkable. It's great. And for a Yankee fan, Judge up against the record of Roger Maris is pretty neat. But right now, with how impossible it seems for Albert Pujols to get to 700, when you have a month left of the season, all he needs to do is get five, and then he claims he's going to walk away and that's done. He's not going to come back to go get a home run or two if he's short. I'm actually in a bizarre way. You would think the more impressive and the more day-to-day talk would be Judge. I am personally, though, more intrigued with Albert Pujols, because I don't know what to accept once you get outside the AL, because Judge isn't going to go hit 73. A lot of people don't even think that's the real record, and you get into that whole debate with steroids and non-steroid guys. So I'm going to go Pujols right now gets my attention more than Aaron Judge, because Yankees aren't playing well, too, and I think that factors into it. Yankees aren't playing well. That's more the story right now, is are the Yankees going to lose the AL East? And even Judge hasn't embraced this either. I heard an interview he did the other day after the game, and he doesn't even seem to care about the record. Now, once he breaks the Maris record, assuming he does so, maybe that's a little bit different. But for me personally, at the end of the career of Albert Pujols, I'm just a little bit more intrigued with that onsides. How about you on that one?
Oh, Albert Pujols, without a doubt. 700, we'll never see that again, probably.
You also hate the Yankees, though.
Well, no, but we'll never see 700 home runs eclipsed. Actually, that's not true. You might. But that's far more impressive than one season of 62.
Especially because we think Albert Pujols did so cleanly.
Right. And it's such a number that very few guys, I mean, there's what, three guys that have gotten to that, you know,
well,
gone that far?
Well, without using roids, Maris would be the single season home run king. So it is impressive what Judge is doing if he passes Maris. But as someone that we both grew up in the steroid era, I think we look back at that a little bit more fondly than, let's just say, someone that's 60 that's listening right now.
I would say a majority, if we polled the audience, a majority would still recognize Barry Bonds as the home run king, both number-wise and 73-wise.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I think so.
I would say it's Barry Bonds because they allowed it and it did great things for baseball. Even if we look at it in a in a bizarre way now and it's frowned upon now, I think that would be a very close poll question. That would be, that's what we call a hot button topic. That's what we say to cheesy radio voice. Who's the real home run king? 855-2124-CBS. Give me a call. Calls, calls, calls.
Who's the mattress king? See, that's another hot button topic.
Yeah. we're talking football.
Yes, we are. Let's go to football,
Zach. We're talking baseball, but you get the point.
The Steelers' depth chart has been a source of controversy these last 24 hours. On Monday, the first official depth chart was listed as Mitch Trubisky being the starter and Kenny Pickett being third string. Now, today, the Steelers' depth chart was changed as Pickett was moved up to replace Mason Rudolph as the backup quarterback. Mike Tomlin was here to explain the reasoning.
It was a clerical error, you know? That's how the depth chart was listed at the start of training camp, so the cut-and-paste component was the cut-and-paste component. I know you were hoping for a little bit more colorful explanation, but it is what it is. That's what happened.
Onsides or offsides, Zach, you believe Mike Tomlin that it was just a clerical error that had the first official depth chart listing Kenny Pickett as third string.
Hit the sounder.
Offsides.
Do I even need to give an explanation?
Sounder says it all.
That would be as if we were holding a producer competition here at CBS Sports Radio. Ryan wins the competition. But everyone wanted to see maybe the young and up-and-coming producer. Let's go EJ. EJ Stone. Everyone loves EJ around here. Or Connor Green, right? Like, one of those two guys, those are...
Who's Mason Rudolph? Is that Connor Green?
No. I'm not going there. But let's just say someone either wanted to see Connor or EJ win. And I had the depth chart, and I put that person as three. And then let's say I just put Jack Stern for a random name in at two. And then the next day I go, oh, because I saw the outrage and how annoyed people were. Yeah, that was just an error here. I mean, we copy and pasted things wrong. EJ or Connor were really supposed to be the second producer and wait to see Ryan Hot Take Hickey just fail. Hey, could anyone buy that? But especially how detail-oriented these organizations are, especially Mike Tomlin. The guy sounds like he's running the military with how he speaks about his football team.
I think it's time for Microsoft to bring Clippy back. That way, that error would have, you know, if it's a copy and paste error, that would have been avoided. Clippy, are you sure you want to put Kenny Pickett third? You know what, Clippy? You're right. I did not. Thank you. Boom. Drama avoided. Remember that back in the day?
Yeah, I do. I remember sitting in my grandfather's old house, and he taught me how to use the computer. And Microsoft Word was always used with, the little
paperclip.
Yeah. That was a fun way to learn about the
computer.
Do you
have any questions?
Yeah.
Man, sounds like we got to bring that back.
I was the worst when it came to grammar and spell check in college. I was horrible.
Clippy was your best friend then.
Yeah, writing, I'm not great. Speaking, no problem. Or I think so. Some of the listening audience may disagree. But anyway, what do you got for me?
All right, going back to last night, Monday night, it was an up-and-down season debut for Clemson quarterback DJ Uiagalelei, as did account for two touchdowns and throw for 209 passing yards, while also losing a fumble in what ended up being a blowout win over Georgia Tech. Now, the junior was under siege for a large part of the night, getting sacked three times, while also having his receivers drop multiple passes. His backup, highly touted Cade Klubnik, came in for one drive, went 4-6, 50 yards, and a touchdown. Onside or offside, Zach, DJ Uiagalelei will be benched by week five.
So when you say by week five, you mean he does not start the NC State game?
Correct.
They'll beat Furman. They'll beat La Tech. So even if they lose the Wake Forest game, and this is operating as no injuries occurred to.
Right. Benched for play.
Even if they lose to Wake Forest, I still think he'd be starting up against NC State. I don't think he's going to make it the entire season, but by week five, so before that NC State game even occurs, y'all go offside there.
Offside!
And finally, NBC Sports' Peter King published this week his 2022 NFL predictions. Two of his predictions were quarterback-driven, as he believes Kenny Pickett will replace Mitch Trubisky as a Steelers starter by mid-October.
Smart man.
King also predicted Jimmy G will replace Trey Lance as a 49ers quarterback before their Week 7 game against the Chiefs. So, Zach, onsides or offsides? The 49ers will make a change at quarterback before the Steelers do.
Now, I didn't see this from Peter King. I did see him have the Saints as the number one overall seed in the NFC. He loves the Saints this year. That's just, that I don't get. Was his explanation based off injury, or this was, I'm assuming, performance, right?
Performance-based, yes, sir.
You drafted Trey Lance. Not only did you draft him, you traded up to go get him and aggressively trading up. Now we're going to put Jimmy G there, who you're telling me is not good enough to win a Super Bowl by the move you made to go draft Trey Lance. I don't care if it's performance-based. What, even if Lance is horrible, I would not bench him. You got to give Trey Lance the entire season. And at the end of the year, we're going to know if you had that feeling in your mind, that feeling in your tummy, if the guy has potential to be a franchise quarterback in this league. I would not go back to Jimmy G unless there is an injury. So the 49ers make a change at quarterback before the Steelers. So they can make a change. And I have a tough time thinking that it's still going to be before the Steelers. You could potentially see Pickett get on the field by week four. The first 3 weeks are ugly for Trubisky. You also have the Dolphins, the Saints later on the season. At the absolute latest, December, Falcons. That would be the absolute latest. I think you're going to see, though, Kenny Pickett. I'll go the first half of the season. At one point, you'll see him. I don't think that they're going to pull the plug in the first half on Trey Lance, so I'm going offsides on that one.
Offside.
That is onsides offside on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, down goes LSU. How are Tigers fans feeling about Brian Kelly? As he probably preached after the game about how you welcome him into your family with that accent of his, which I still don't understand where it's coming from. But we got to talk some LSU, as it was not a go Tigers type of evening, as Florida State with the blocked PAT to win the game.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Now I'm hungry for some wings, Ryan. I had some wings over the weekend. Late night, after party at the wedding, go back to the hotel, wings, bone in, hot wings with blue cheese, and they had cheesesteaks. Perfect. And I mean perfect. After party wedding food. Especially when the booze was, let's just say, flowing at the wedding. Cheesesteaks and wings, and they had some good French fries, well-done French fries. That was Fat Kid Hedvig after the after party, for the after party.
That's a real Philly wedding right there. Cheesesteaks at the after party. I am jealous.
And they were much needed. Much needed. Because you know how it is when you go to a wedding. The cocktail hour is always great. The main course was actually good, but it was served as family style, which usually they'll just bring you a plate at a wedding. This wedding, it was served as family style. I knew half the people at my table, and the other half I didn't know. We were outside. It was an outdoor bar, so we missed when they said to go sit down for dinner. So I got some scraps of chicken. Now, it was good. Salad was good, all that, but when you have a few drinks, you had a wedding, you go back to the hotel, they give you wings and a cheesesteak. Load me up. That was good. No doubt about that. The free AutoZone Fix Finder service can help troubleshoot the likely cause of your pesky check engine light for free and get you back in the road. Restrictions apply. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Florida State LSU. Is there more of a demoralizing way, Ryan, to lose the game for Brian Kelly and LSU? You go down the entire length of the field. You go 99 yards. You score the touchdown. All you need for overtime is to kick the extra point, and it's blocked. Florida State just survives after almost fumbling away the game. 24-23, they win, and the Seminoles are now 2-0 with Mike Norvell. And Brian Kelly went home to his family after the game, and they were 0-1. Rough debut.
What's worse, if they lost 49-3 or losing in the heartbreaking fashion that they did?
I think the takes would be more excessive if you lost 49-3.
Agreed.
You lose on a blocked extra point. Sure, you should have played better. The offense was horrible. Even at halftime, Brian Kelly said it was brutal. You get blown out, though. If put it this way, Florida State pulled a Georgia, and LSU is Oregon, that would be worse. Because It wasn't inconceivable going into this game that Florida State would win. It wasn't inconceivable to me. I did lean slightly on the side and thought that LSU was going to win, but I never thought that LSU was going to blow Florida State out in this ball game. So you lose by 1 point. It's not the end of the world, but the way you lost is brutal. Now, if they would have lost by 40-something points, yeah, Brian Kelly may have been one and done at LSU. And I'm not even meaning a full season. I'm talking about one game. Because they have changed coaches a lot. And you just look at the last two coaches, now, different reasons. Les Miles wins a national championship. Didn't last much longer than that. Ed Orgeron. Won a national championship. Had one of the greatest seasons you'll ever see in college football. He was out 2 years afterwards. Before we play the audio call, can we talk about the old head football coach for a second, Ed Orgeron? So let's play you this. This is Ed Orgeron detailing his exit at LSU. This courtesy of the Little Rock Touchdown Club. Wasn't this the same thing that John Gruden talked about where he made it the rounds last week? So now let's hear Ed O.
I'm so grateful of my time for LSU. That was my opportunity. You know, coaches got a shelf. Some coaches got 50 years. Some coaches got 12. Mine was 6. Good. I got to tell you, we had a meeting. Say, coach, things are not going well. No shit. Ray Charles can see that, brother. And they were good. And Scott Woodward is a friend of mine today. Really, really, a lot of respect for the way they handled me.
So and what's next?
Well, I got to tell you this, though. Say, coach, you got $17.1 million on your contract. We're going to give it to you. I said, what time you want me to leave? What door you want me out of, brother?
You know, Scott Woodward told me that we weren't playing well. And, you know, Ray Charles could have seen that. And, you know, go Tigers. And the next thing you know, $17.1 million come my way. And I almost had a heart palpitation. They pay me all that money?
That is, I love that O for that. It does seem a little bit weak that you won't try to fight for your job, but he knew the end was there, and he knew it was over at LSU. But I love the way that he told that story. And he could have not even finished that story, and whoever was interviewing him basically tried to end the story, and he goes, no, I got to finish the story. He wanted everyone to know. That is such a boss move by Ed Orgeron. Yeah, I got all the money that was left on my contract. I love Ed Orgeron. They got it. He's got to coach again. I don't think he will, but I hope he does coach again.
Where would he? I don't even know where he would fit in.
Small school.
Trying to think. Louisiana Tech. just to get one more event shot. You're paying me $17 million. Whoop the ass.
And now you have Brian Kelly. You couldn't have more of an opposite coach. Ed Orgeron sounds Louisiana. And Brian Kelly tries to sound as if he's from New Orleans, and he does a terrible job faking that accent. Family, family, family. Brian Kelly.
Sounds like he's from Savannah, Georgia.
How much pressure is on Brian Kelly this year? Just stating the way that the other two coaches won and then are still no longer there. Now, Les Miles is completely different. But seeing the way that that did go down, do you is this season really that important for LSU? Like, no one thinks LSU is going to be this great. They have a lot of talent, but I don't think that talent's going to come together as quickly as they thought. And I look at this team as what? 6-win team this year? Maybe 7? I don't think this is going to be a super successful year for LSU, especially, and you never know what to expect when it's a first-year head football coach taking over. But fans, you know, fans, their patience wears thin very quickly. And even though he's a big-time coach, it seems as if a lot of people are rooting against Brian Kelly. It seems like it was a polarizing hire bringing in Brian Kelly because not many people leave Notre Dame. He left Notre Dame because he didn't think he was going to win a national championship at Notre Dame, and he's trying to go win a national championship there.
So it took Coach O, it was his fourth year when he won a national title in 2019.
And everyone thought that was his final year, and then
right. He
won the whole thing.
I was just going to say, I don't think Brian Kelly's getting 4 years if things don't, you know, drastically turn quickly. Like if they go 6-6 or 7-6, you're starting and you're looking at, you know, a 3-4 or 3-5 start next year. I would not be surprised. I would not be shocked if he is fired after 2 years.
2 years?
2 years.
Oh,
patience is thin. If you're not winning and you're going backwards in the SEC, that's getting more competitive.
But is it really going to be that ugly?
I don't think so. But a loss like this, you know, never know where these losses go, man.
Not for nothing. And I love Ed O. But that was not a... Everyone wanted Tom Herman there. He won a national championship. Les Miles won a national championship
there.
You're right. Now, Nick Saban has won a national championship. Now, Nick Saban's arguably the greatest coach of all time. You've had three coaches since 2000 win a national title there. I'm not telling you that Brian Kelly's ever going to win a national title. And there's different ways to define success. And there it's clearly winning a title and then some. But I got to think that he'll get that program back in the right direction. Is it to the level where LSU is going to want it to be in terms of championship or championships? That I don't know. But I would be surprised if he does not at least get to see the start of the third season. After one loss, I would be surprised.
Well, I am
that.
Saying like worst case scenario, but I do think if like you asked how important is this year, I think it's important enough to where if it does, you know, if
they
it goes south,
three wins,
and you know,
have 5-6 wins, and I think they'll do that.
I think he's the leash is a lot shorter than maybe some think.
Now, real quickly, because sometimes you say things and you want to get some checks and balances in this. I want to do a quick, and I mean a quick win-loss on the LSU football schedule for this upcoming season. And I will not hold you to this. So
Troy loss.
Pretty close.
Dude, used to do the Coach O following his shoes.
Let me pull up the schedule here. My phone's not loading. Do you have this? Can you pull up the schedule? Because for whatever reason, my phone will not load their schedule right now. So let's we'll try to get this up for you. And I just want to see where you think this... I got it. Southern University.
Win.
Yeah, I would hope so. No. GD. This thing just disappeared on me.
I got it for you. Mississippi State at home, 6 Eastern. I'll go LSU because it's in Death Valley. Close.
So you have a 2-1.
New Mexico
the next week.
Win.
3-1. Auburn.
Programs in shambles. Win.
For LSU.
For Auburn.
Oh, for Auburn.
Sorry. Auburn's programs and shambles. My apologies.
That's what
LSU
I thought you were saying.
Is a win.
So they're going to be 4-1 there.
Yes.
Tennessee.
Loss.
4-2. Florida.
Loss.
4-3. Ole Miss.
Loss.
4-4. Bama.
Loss.
4-5. Arkansas.
Loss.
4-6. UAB.
There's a win. Back.
5-6. And then finally, Texas A&M.
Probably go loss, although I'm not high in A&M. That's
so you have them 5-7.
5-7.
But you don't have them winning. I got to think they win one. Forget Alabama, but Arkansas, A&M, Florida, Tennessee.
Okay, they win one. They're 6-6.
Ole Miss. Yeah.
If you're right, 6-6.
And that's what I think they're going to be this year. I think it'll be a 5 or 6-win team. I don't think you're that terribly that far off, but I got to think they're going to win one of those big SEC games, which is considered big for them right now. All right, let's hear the two calls, then we'll take a break. Give me elation first. Give me the Florida State call of the block kick.
Superdome right now. Boy, to snap, Ramlett to hold, to send it to free football. Snap, spot, blocked!
Yeah!
It's no good!
Yeah!
It's blocked! Shaheen Brown got his men on it! Fire up the war chant and plant the spear! Knowles win!
That's a great call. Learfield IMG, that was Jeff Colhane. That's a 9.1 out of 10. What's your rating on that? Go ahead.
I like 8.7. Anytime there's screaming in the background, I just love. I can't get enough of that.
Need a little voice crack there. Like the Sean McDonough voice crack.
Seminoles win the game.
Yeah.
Blocked.
Sound like you're just hitting puberty. Marco, what's your judge on that call?
I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay. Nice. As Dave Portnoy would say, rookie score for Marco Belletti, just going right at the 9. Let's get to the LSU version. This is Chris Blair, Learfield IMG.
Here's the snap. Placement down. Kick on the way, and it is blocked, and it hits the crossbar. No good. And Florida State going to survive this one 24-23.
That's it? He didn't seem that devastated. If that was me, here comes the kick. Oh, mother of pearl. Sit there in silence. It's blocked.
Maybe a little smack on the desk.
I can't believe it. What the bleep just happened? And then I would lay out.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. That did not seem to capture how demoralizing that moment was. You hear the exuberance when you get to the Florida State call, the LSU call. That's one of the more demoralizing things and a way to lose a game. I give that a 2.8 out of 10. I thought that was a horrible call. Play that call for me one more time.
Here's the snap. Placement down. Kick on the way, and it is blocked, and it hits the crossbar. No good. And Florida State going to survive this one 24-23.
You would think as if the guy missed the 45-yard field goal. It's an extra point. You just went 99 yards to tie the game. What's your rating on that?
3-1. I mean, one, oh my God, anything.
Nothing.
No sort of. He sounded happy. He sounded way too happy. I mean, actually, 3-1 might be too. 1-4. Bad.
Marco?
I don't think it's that bad.
Really?
It's really not that bad.
It's a homer call, Marco.
I understand that, but I'm a little different. The layout and the not giving me the actual what happened in the game makes me nuts. I understand if he needs more emotion there. Absolutely. But the fact that he actually told me what happened, I like. So in that regard, I'll give him a 5.
A 5. Okay. So Marco's an easy grader.
In some way. But I'm odd. I'm strange in that I don't like the, you know, where it's just like, oh, I can't believe what happened. Because all I'm thinking to myself is if I'm listening to you on the radio,
That means
I'm not watching. If I'm not watching and all you yell is that, I'm now probably in my car almost going to drive off the road. What the hell just happened? And it makes me nuts.
Fine. Then you need to articulate as if like death happened.
Yes. No. That's why he had no energy. The call itself is not bad. The energy lacking through the entire thing is why it's as bad as it was. But I like the fact that he actually told me what happened.
Okay. I gotcha. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Should Trey Lance be annoyed with Jimmy G still being on the team? We'll get to that on the other side.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Is this a big deal or not a big deal? So Albert Breer, in his Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback article, wrote, "And while I heard Lance was a little annoyed in the immediate aftermath, he's a smart, mature kid who I believe can handle it." That's what he wrote. Truth is, if he couldn't, you might have bigger questions about where the Niners are at the position. Then there was a note that was a little change to this article. And Breer said that he was a bit presumptive in the original Monday Morning Quarterback article via NBC Sports. This is the article I'm reading right now, has been edited with the mention of annoyed removed. The new line now reads, "While I heard the news was, as you'd expect, a little complicated for Lance to take at first, he's a smart, mature kid who I believe can handle it." Is that big of a difference? If originally you said Lance was annoyed, Ryan, and then the change was, "While I heard the news was, as you expect, a little complicated." If it's complicated for him, doesn't that also just make me assume that he was annoyed by it? I don't think there's that much of a difference when you go annoyed and then you change it to complicated.
Especially when you already put it out there.
It expresses frustration from Lance.
Yes, it shows that either way how strong the feeling is. Maybe that's up for debate, but there is clearly, he is, at least according to this report, not all in on Jimmy G returning this year, even as a backup.
And I remember Jimmy G did an interview with Adam Schein. We played the audio at some point this offseason. And he basically said, "What happened last year, I don't wish upon anybody." Now, it doesn't appear that Jimmy G and Lance can't stand each other and they have this bad relationship. Jimmy G just thought it was awkward because week to week it was, when is Jimmy G going to get pulled? When are you going to go to Trey Lance? Now you have the roles reversed where Trey Lance is the guy. And then people are trying to take Trey Lance off the field and they're waiting for Trey Lance to fail before you eventually go back to Jimmy G, which is It doesn't make sense why you would go back to Jimmy G. If you're Kyle Shanahan and you're John Lynch, I know they're two well-respected guys at what they do with their job in the front office and the coaching staff. You fail with Trey Lance after making this move, it makes you look horrible. if you go back to Jimmy Garoppolo at one point? Why'd you give up all those picks to go get Trey Lance if you're not even going to give him a full season? Should they not have Jimmy G on this roster, Ryan?
No, I still think it's the right move. He's still, you know, he's the best backup quarterback out there in the market.
It's amazing. I know he was hurt, but it's amazing how they weren't able to get a deal done.
Very true. I would agree.
For 2 years. I know that they didn't want to play Trey Lance last year, and there were some reports that maybe they were being stubborn and you would need 2 second-round picks, and some of that stuff has been refuted and all that, or they had an offer of 2 second-round picks. It's kind of amazing to me that we got back to all the teams that needed quarterbacks, and I know that Jimmy G was hurt and wasn't able to be cleared until August, but it's crazy to me how he's still on the 49ers.
Yeah, I will say at this point, when the trade was made, what is that, March of 2021, right?
Roughly? 2 years ago.
I would not be, if you asked me 2022, September, was Jimmy G on the roster, I'd say no. No way.
I thought last year would have been his final year. And,
right.
And I would have thought that Trey Lance would eventually replace him at some point last season. Now you have to go to Trey Lance because you know Jimmy G's not going to win you a Super Bowl, even though he got close. But the guy you're going to, we don't even know if he's going to be ready. And I can't tell you he's not ready. I don't know that. But now you have Jimmy G there. I know we like to talk about things, but it does create a distraction. And if I'm Trey Lance, I'm not. This is the way I put it. If they come to you and say, oh, we're going to keep Jimmy G on the roster, externally, I'm saying, who cares? But internally, you got to be thinking, oh, the moment I throw an interception, it's just natural from a human standpoint. The fans may be calling for Jimmy G to come back in. But as Albert Breer said on the back end of that, if that's an issue for Trey Lance, like a serious issue, you can be annoyed by something and not really impact your life and be a serious issue. But if this is a serious issue for Trey Lance, well, then you're not mentally tough enough to play the quarterback position. And I'm not saying that there haven't been some alpha dogs that have been sensitive. Brady was sensitive about Jimmy Garoppolo. Brett Favre was sensitive about Aaron Rodgers. All different. But if you think that guy's going to replace you, then I don't want you being my starting quarterback. Because for Trey Lance, you should think, I'm the bleeping man, bleep Jimmy Garoppolo. There's a reason why this team traded up to go get me. And yes, he's there. So what? If you play well, even with some speed bumps along the way, if you majority of the season play well, they're not going to pull you. Because Shanahan and Lynch would look foolish, especially if they do so early, if they pull you, unless you get hurt. That's the only way that I'd sit him down this year, is if he gets hurt. 855-212-4CBS. I know Aaron's been holding for a while in Alabama. He wants to get a college football point in. Aaron, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. You know, what I learned from this weekend is we do not need college football expansion. It's just not necessary. The great teams, they rise to the top year in, year out. And also, when you do that, when you expand it, it's basically saying we have SEC fatigue. It's just like, hey, we're getting bored of seeing the same guys there every year. Even though they're the best, they have the best players and the best coaches. And, you know, because if you look at the stats, every single year in the first round of the college football playoff, the team gets blown out by the better team. In the SEC, when they play a Notre Dame, Notre Dame gets blown out. When they play a Michigan State, they get blown out. It's just a blowout city, and it's boring, and it's really not fair to those teams that work all year.
Well, Aaron, you know why they're expanding. They're expanding because of money. That's what it is. I don't think
that's
it's
right.
SEC
and
fatigue.
It's not right.
I don't get fatigued by Alabama. I don't get fatigued by Georgia now if they're going to go on this run. I don't think it's fatigue, but they're expanding by money because a lot of these schools could go get more of a share of the pie and there's more money to gain. And you're going to be having the Power Five as we know it truncate. So they're going to I don't like the expansion because I think it takes away from the regular season. If you're going to expand, you go to 8. I don't think you need to go to 12. I personally, though, would keep it at 4. That's just me. But yeah, Bama, Georgia, they're probably the two best teams right now in college football. Ohio State is definitely in the top 3. And we got to see if Ohio State is going to challenge Alabama and Georgia this year. That's really right now. It's those 3 schools running for the national title. And we'll see who else will enter the conversation. We'll talk more college football on the other side. Harry Douglas will join us.